Bandcast to start the week. Drancer and a couple of items of note from the Canucks, or at least former Canucks, Josh Levo choosing Calgary over the Vancouver Canucks. And we know now that the Canucks have opted not to use either of the buyout windows available to them. So thought maybe it was going to be a bit of a quiet weekend, but far from it. Always good when we get Canuck news, because that gives us things to chew on.
Absolutely, and gives us something to chew on as we make our way to Calgary and start up the Flames Cast, our new athletic Calgary Flames podcast. Sorry, listeners, we've decided to depart Vancouver with Levo, Markstrom, Louis Domingue, Finn. We're taking Finn. We're going. It's Halloween. Boo. The scariest thing right now, if you're a Canucks fan, is a former Canuck, aka a former Canuck podcaster, going turncoat and joining the team on the other side of the Rockies.
I'm getting word the lawyers have stepped in. We can't call it the Flames Cast. It has to be the Calcast, I think, is how it has to go.
The Calcast, right. Or the Kagai. Because the Calcast, that would be like a Friedman acronym there. I don't know if I can play that game. But look, the Levo thing is an interesting one, I think, because, you know, as Ben Kuzma reported, the Canucks did make a similar offer to Levo and, you know, made some calls, tried to sort of get to the bottom of it over the weekend. And my understanding is that definitely the Canucks offer was in the same ballpark. Ultimately, here's what I think it came down to. And you know, this is partly me connecting the dots here. But when you consider the timing and how this all went down, like, Calgary came hard. Calgary came hard at Josh Levo. Like, Levo knows Sean Monahan, Mark Giordano from Ontario. Tanev and Markstrom got involved in the recruiting process. And ultimately, I do think they offered more. Meanwhile, the Canucks had sort of waited, right? They'd waited. Like, Levo was far down their list of priorities. And we all know how their summer went, and or their summer, their offseason went, and how many different balls they had in the air. And if there's a cause for concern, it's not that, you know, a guy who could be a pretty decent middle six forward if he bounces back from injury, but carries a ton of injury risk on his short-term projection. It's not that that player's departed. It's that this is another player in that, like, Tanev Stecher sort of mold, where one wonders if the Canucks had been better able to communicate their vision to their own players, if they might have kept the guy on side, as opposed to having him sit around, having worked, you know, his ass off through a recovery that did not start well, right? That had setbacks, that was painful and tough. And, you know, you sit around, you work through that, you get cleared, and you're watching all of your teammates get raises while you're sort of waiting to get an offer, right? I mean, I just think that ultimately this is sort of another moment where the Canucks probably could have kept the guy if the communication had been better and if they'd sort of made him feel like a priority, regardless of whether or not he was as big a priority as all the other fish that they had to fry.
Yeah, I saw in the piece by Wes Gilbertson out of Calgary that the Flames flew Levo in for a medical, which that just seems like doing your due diligence on this player. You know, we did wonder if the injury, I mean, obviously it was a concern, but the fact that he remained on the market, like, I wondered if teams really had some real issues about signing Josh Levo. But obviously the Calgary Flames saw what they needed to see. Got the medical out of the way. You know, I guess I understand. I mean, there's a couple things. One is, you know, when three of the guys, I guess Louis Domingue makes it four, but really three off the roster, pick the Calgary Flames. You know, if Josh Levo had signed in Carolina or somewhere else, not a big deal. But the fact that he joins these other two frontline guys with a division rival, you know, that just adds layers to all of this, obviously. And the other thing, too, and you mentioned it, like, there is a ton of risk for the Calgary Flames. Not financial, because 875 is not a prohibitive figure, but I don't know if people are familiar with Kevin Miller in Boston, and he basically suffered the same injury.
Yes.
He suffered a broken kneecap late in the 2018-19 season. He hasn't played an NHL game since.
I know.
And, like, it is, you just think of all the moving parts in the knee and trying to play at an elite level where you need you know, you need that explosiveness. You got to be free in your mind, like that knee is going to support you, and you're going to be able to do all the things that you want. And so, you know, just too with where we are with COVID, like keep in mind, Josh Leivo will not play a National Hockey League game in calendar year 2020. So yeah. Miller's a few years older than he is. Makes the recovery a little tougher, I would imagine. But still, like, I hope the best for Josh Leivo. I think he would have been a nice piece for the Vancouver Canucks, but he still has to get out there and prove that he can get back to being an everyday National Hockey Leaguer.
No question. And especially when you consider where Josh Leivo's skills are, right, which is sort of top of the circles down along the wall, and where his weaknesses are, in particular is skating, right? I do think there's, you know, a significant risk to his injury projection. But also, you know, there is an argument to be made that Calgary has less depth for a player like Leivo than the Canucks do even, right? Like the Flames, I think, only had one other top or one other right-handed shot among guys likely to play in their top nine. Like if Levo's the Leivo we saw last fall, he could be a top six addition for the Flames. Like he could end up playing with that Backlund line. And I mean, that's a tremendous opportunity for him. Hopefully, you know, his body cooperates, his rehab pays off, and he's able to hit that level, because this is a guy who's had a really tough NHL go, you know, benched in Toronto, knee fracture in Vancouver. You just sort of root for a guy like that to get a fair shake with, you know, and for his body to be healthy. But, you know, I just want to come back to the Canucks specifically as opposed to Leivo, because from where I sit, right, I've been trying to sort of put my finger on how to, like, cut to the middle of the full gamut of Canucks offseason work. And I kind of think now that we're sort of through much of the month of October, right? Much of the, like, hockey news month. This is like This is like we're approaching the middle or the start of August, right? Like hockey news isn't done. There's still stuff to happen this offseason. There's actually an unusual amount of uncertainty and players still available. But nonetheless, you know, a lot of the shoes have dropped, right? And when I try and make sense of the last 3 weeks of Canucks news that we've witnessed, you know, it feels to me a part of a lot of what else we've seen from the Benning era, right? Like, to this point, right, it's like they had three main priorities, right? The Markstrom, try to re-sign Markstrom, and if not, manage his departure. And they did that. They got Braden Holtby. They were ready. They were proactive on that front, you know, reaching out to a variety of candidates, getting Holtby done right after Markstrom didn't accept, you know, once Markstrom made it be clear a little bit before the market opened that he was going to test the market, they were ready to go. They wanted to upgrade their defense corps, not just retain their defensemen, but upgrade their defense corps. And they brought in Nate Schmidt, right? That's mission accomplished. That's an upgrade to your top four, even though they're a little bit thinner on the back end. And I think we should talk about Jim's comments about playing the young guys a little bit later in the podcast. Let's circle back to that. And then obviously they wanted to save cash flow, right? Like cash is king right now and all contracts are backdiving. You know, no buyouts exercised. Buyouts actually save you money until you spend into the created cap space. So we've obviously seen those three things achieved. And it just reminds me of a lot of what else we've seen in the Benning era, where it's like, you know, they did nail the draft table, right? But the details, the margins, right? Like at the margins is where this club's made their mistakes on the unrestricted free agent market in terms of their cap management, right? Like that's sort of what got them into a little bit of a hole this offseason. And it just feels like that's continued. Like they hit the big items, the big ticket items got hit, but the margins, the details, the depth players, the value signings. You know, I like Chase Hauerluck, but I think Josh Leivo's a better bet because he's a better player when they're fully healthy, you know, when he's fully healthy. It just seems like in those margins, with those details, with those depth players, this management club or management team is still struggling to, you know, maybe not see the bigger picture, but certainly maximize the depth and quality of their own lineup. And in so doing, you know, are not giving players like Pettersson and Hughes their absolute best chance to lead this team to a repeat of last season's success, in my view. You know, same logic applies to the head coach. Same logic applies just to this young core group. Like, they're not being supported as well as they could be. And this should be a concern, I think, because the types of multi-front discussions that characterized this offseason, and yes, this offseason was uniquely uncertain and uniquely tricky, but it's not getting more simple. Like, it's not going to get simpler from here. Like, Pettersson's going to become more expensive. Hughes is going to become more expensive. If Demko seizes the number one job, he's going to be arbitration eligible with a great case. He's going to be more expensive. Like, it's going to get harder and harder to make these puzzle pieces fit. It's going to require more and more, you know, like a level of smoothness in terms of handling all of these different sort of burners all at once. Like, you know, this is a flat top. And it's like the Canucks nailed the main, but the hash browns are just a little burnt. And it's like that's not gonna cut it once this team is a true, like, cap team type contender. You know, we just haven't seen them nail those sides yet. You know, like, to this point in the Benning era, they've accumulated tremendous talent. They've made the pain of losing count, right? Like, this Canucks team lost a lot, and they made it count by mining a ton of good young talent, truly elite talent in Pettersson and Hughes, and a decent supporting cast of young talent. But if you're burning the sides, like, you're not making a great meal. Like, it just is what it is. And, you know, I think there is some lingering concern about that. Like, we still haven't seen that type of dexterity on evidence based on what the Canucks have accomplished this season, this offseason.
Damn it. Don't you dare burn my hash browns.
I know, right? Like, that would suck. And then, but everyone's like, but man, Jeff. Like, in this market, people are like, but man, Jeff, those eggs, they're so well cooked. It's like, damn it, I want a well cooked egg and I want hash browns, for fuck's sake.
No,
like,
I want it all too, exactly. You know? Give me the golden brown hash browns, but don't overcook them.
And then people, like, are like, you're just being impatient. You're being impatient waiting for non-burned hash browns. It's like, no, fuck it.
No.
Like, we want a good fucking meal here.
Absolutely. And look, we've covered a lot of ground in October. I mean, we've done two a week here as all these things have unfolded, as Markstrom's gone out the door and Tanev, and, you know, I mean, people know the storylines by now. I still maintain, like, there's no possible way that letting all five of their pending UFAs walk was the plan heading into the offseason. Like, part of the plan may have been waiting on other teams and poaching on the secondary trade market like they did with Nate Schmidt. I'll give them. Like, that may have been part of the plan, but there is no way that when they got bounced from the bubble and they had internal meetings, that somewhere on a whiteboard at Rogers Arena was, let all five of our main guys walk. And we have proof of that because they tried to negotiate with a bunch of them. So it does beg the question about, like, why couldn't Jim close? Why couldn't Jim and this management group close on any of their own unrestricted free agents? And you know, a guy like Levo, yeah, maybe a bit part, but again, a useful piece. I think there's a spot for him on this Vancouver team to make the Canucks better. And whether it was Markstrom and Tanev lobbying from Calgary or the other guys that you mentioned, like, what made Josh Levo pick the Calgary Flames over the Vancouver Canucks? Like, why hasn't this management group been able to close on anybody other than Braden Holtby? And let's be honest, like, Holtby's making more than Markstrom did last year. They will, in real dollars, they're paying more for their goaltending this coming season than they did last year, and it's taken a step back. So, like, goaltending's the least of my concerns, but, like, when you look at what they accomplished in free agency, they got Braden Holtby, they got Jace Hauerlach, who may or may not make this team. I don't know. I'll give him every opportunity.
Yeah, he's a good bet.
But there would be nights where Holtby doesn't play, and if Hauerlach doesn't make this team, the only addition in their lineup will be Nate Schmidt.
Right.
Like, from the outside, right?
Yeah. No, you're right. And, you know, there's no way that makes them better than they were in the bubble, right? Like, there's no way. And
absolutely.
And this team accomplished what they accomplished on a knife's edge anyway, right? Like, they overachieved. Markstrom carried them an awful lot of nights in that regular season. And then come playoff time, you know, they executed a game plan against the Blues tremendously well. And against Vegas for the most part, too. Like, they figured out ways to design how they could play to beat those teams. And yet, I mean, it was hanging on by their fingernails, right? Like, there's no way Just like there's no way that the plan on the whiteboard is to let all five UFAs walk. Like, there's no way the plan on the whiteboard is to get outshot by 103 by Vegas. But that's how they had to play to win. And if you have to play like that to win in the second round of the playoffs, like, you're not a contender. You know, like, I don't care that you've won more playoff rounds than the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, the Toronto Maple Leafs don't have to play like that to win. They might not win, but they don't have to play like that. Like, they're Sheldon Keefe, when he assesses his options, doesn't have to make the same types of, like, decisions to punt that Travis Green does. And for me, that goes to the heart of team quality. Like, this team's not yet good enough. And whether or not that's good enough in the last year of Pettersson and Hughes ELCs, like, I'll leave that to the listeners. But for me, you know, the bigger concern is just what it tells us about the big picture and whether or not it gives you confidence in this management group's ability to manage things when everything is tight every year, like year after year, reallocating space because your best young players are a lot more expensive than they are now.
Yeah, and so, you know, you pointed out earlier, like, they don't play, we don't know when they're going to play next. You know, there is the possibility of movement still, but let's just, you know, now that Vertanen's deal's done, Levo's made his decision.
Yeah, and they didn't carve out cap space, like, right? With
we're,
the
yeah, it feels like we're at a point in time where, you know, this is it. Like, there may be another move somewhere down the line, but I think we can kind of look at the totality of the first wave of their to-do list in the offseason, and here we are. And my biggest concern, and I would think it would have to be theirs too, is offensive depth. Like, let's just, for the sake of this argument, Miller, Pettersson, Vertanen, Pearson, Horvat, Besser, there's your top six. What happens when any one of those, pick any one of those six, when they go down with any kind of injury?
Oh, I mean, we all know what's happening, right?
You're back to Brandon Sutter and Antoine Roussel.
Sorry.
Or dare I say Louis.
Yeah, Louis. No, it's Louis. We're not back to Roussel or Sutter. We're back to Louis.
Well, like, no, we are in the middle. Like, if one of the centers goes down, you're looking at either Gaudette gets promoted and
right,
or Sutter slides in, you know, like, on the left side.
Or Miller. Miller moves to center.
Okay, but then that totally alters your wing, like,
for sure.
Know,
but either way, you're back to Louis. So, like, you're right. All roads lead back to Louis Eriksson playing top 6 minutes again this season.
Yeah, and yet in Game 7, when they had options and fully healthy, he couldn't get into their lineup.
Right.
And now you turn to him to somehow be the savior. This is the depth issue. This is, like, and remember, too, like, Goldobin and Boucher have left the organization for Russia. They don't have much below the NHL level right now. Like, honestly, if I sat here and asked you this, is Sven Berchi going to play a game for the Vancouver Canucks this season?
I would not expect him to play ahead of either Hoglander or Cole Lind at this point. Right?
But both of those guys are massive wild cards.
Totally.
Maybe they pan out early on. Like, look, let me rephrase that. They're probably going to pan out, certainly Hoglander, but just in terms of this coming season for a guy that's never played a pro game in North America, I can hear people screaming that name. And look, we know Pod Colson's on his way too, but these are young guys. There's going to be growing pains. There will be some baby steps. And we're talking, to your point, about surrounding this core group that performed so well in the playoffs. The core group showed that they can handle it. It was supporting them, surrounding them, augmenting the lineup so that the next time they get back there, they could be better than they were. And it just, with all of these moves and stripping away pieces, and I get the cash constraints and everything else, they've done nothing to support the core guys that performed so well for them in the playoffs.
Yeah, no, they haven't. And, you know, that should be disappointing. Like, I think a lot of Canucks fans do look at that and think it's disappointing, but I also get into a lot of arguments with people who, on Twitter anyway, who seem to be content with the process and say, you know, you just got to be patient. And for me, that's just lowering the bar. Like, at what point does this team, you know, I was thinking about it when we had Brendan Morrison on Thursday, right? And Brendan Morrison is like the one regret, man. We just didn't have success in the playoffs, right? Well, that team got to the same point that the Canucks got to against Vegas, right? Like, Game 7, second round, right? For the West Coast Express era, that was a cataclysmic failure. Something guys look back on 17 years later and say, man, we blew it, right? And yet, locally, it seems like the Canucks' second round appearance, you know, is cause celeb and proof of concept. And it's like, don't we have to get back pretty quickly? Like, this is a team with two top 20 players, like one of the best young centers and one of the best young defenders in the NHL. Like, you know, making the playoffs for your first year, fine. Like, they overachieved in that year, but don't they have to do it again? Like, why are the expectations not that this team with unbelievable pieces now in the fold, like, you know, two first-line quality centers, an elite puck-moving defenseman, like, just added another top-pair quality defenseman. Why are the expectations for this group not to be a more credible contender than, you know, we'll treat it like a snow day when they win a round in the playoffs? You know, that should be where the expectations are set. And if they're not, for me, that's lowering the bar.
No, I mean, I we've spent 5 years talking about how low the bar has been. And it does, it feels like it's time to raise that bar. And they've got people that are capable. Like, it doesn't matter how high you set that bar. They've got those players now that seem like they're capable of getting there, but they do need some help. And that's the big issue for me, is that you're going, you know, let's say they get back into the playoffs, then you're essentially, and look, trades can happen. I know that they can alter the lineup. Based on what we see right here, if they were to take this group that they've got into the playoffs, it does. It feels like a step back, and it feels like you're asking that same core group to do all of that heavy lifting yet again, instead of finding them a few more pieces that could help with that cause. And that kind of brings us to the fact they didn't use the second buyout window, and that's not a huge surprise. We know that ownership doesn't want to be spending a lot of money to make problems go away, but, you know, Jim Benning was asked about, you referenced Kuz's piece in the province. Jim's now on the record talking about Brandon Sutter and the fact that they didn't buy out Brandon Sutter. And it comes back in the mind of the general manager about, you know, leadership. And look, I've got plenty of time for Brandon Sutter, the person, but you've got Jay Beagle and Tanner Pearson, who both have won Stanley Cups. You add Braden Holtby, who's won a cup. Nate Schmidt's been to the final. Alex Edler has been here forever. He's been to a final. Your captain has been in the league 6 years now and just scored 10 goals in the bubble, and Elias Pettersson is your best player, and he's the guy every other guy in that room actually looks to for, you know, leadership. Like, it can't be enough to have Brandon Sutter's leadership be this reason that he continues to stay on the roster, stay with this hockey club. Tom, in the third period of Game 7 against Vegas, I looked this up this morning, Sutter played three shifts over the final 11 minutes. His Game 7 ice time was 8 minutes and 39 seconds total. In the final 40 minutes, where it was scoreless, essentially, a scoreless hockey game, Brandon Sutter played 4 minutes and 41 seconds of the final 40 minutes against Vegas. Like, clearly the coach didn't see this incredible leadership that had to be there on the regular throughout that game. And Brandon Sutter had his moments early in the playoffs. He did. We've talked about this. But as time went on in the playoffs, he sort of reverted to the player that he is now. And so, again, I wasn't surprised he didn't buy him out, but this idea of propping him up because of his great leadership, find me some guys that can play and can help this hockey club on the ice. They've got enough in that room.
Yeah. You know, we saw around the league, like, it's been hard, for sure, to clear salary in the flat cap era. Like, we've already seen that play out. And yet, you know, Marcus Nuttavaara, Ryan Murray, Andreas Johansson, Jake Allen, you know, we have seen Nick Bjugstad. Like, we have seen guys move cash out with no cash coming back in. Like, we've seen guys move in salary dump type trades. And the Canucks players who are signed to big tickets just aren't valued enough around the league to be dealt, you know, short of Mark Stahl-style sweeteners being attached to them. And, you know, that's a problem, right? Like, that's a problem. And it's a problem because Vancouver's depth's not good enough, right? It's a problem because these guys aren't valued around the league, because the league knows that. And, you know, it's limited their ability to quickly pivot into being a more credible contending team. And, you know, I thought, for me, the Sutter buyout was a little bit of a no-brainer. Like, the idea that the Canucks' competitive window was going to be delayed by the flat cap was a pretty easy takeaway. The moment we realized that the cap was going to be locked in for a few years, like, I think I wrote a piece that Monday, like the Monday following the announcement of the flat cap. I think I have a piece that's like Drance, colon, the Canucks window to contend will be delayed by the flat cap, right? Like I literally wrote that days after, and that's what's come to pass. So, you know, to some extent, there are things beyond management's control, and I'm trying not to pile on. But the other side of it is that, you know, the Sutter buyout would have freed up $2.2 million in space at the cost of $1.16, so $1.2 next year. And, you know, in concert with not qualifying Vertanen, you know, that's $5 million right there. And that $5 million, for me, like, could have been spent on Hamonic and Jesper Fast or something better, you know, like something that's more likely to provide you with significant value. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, for all that I've been critical of the details, like, this is the one area that I keep coming back to as their biggest missed opportunity. You know, and I get that there's other dynamics at play in terms of cost and spending and the uncertainty attached to whether the season's shortened and what players will be compensated. And if you're buying out a deal, you're buying it out at full freight. But maybe, you know, so there's a variety of things that make it more complicated than you know, I'm laying it out. But nonetheless, to me, there's huge opportunity costs attached to both of those decisions, and opportunity costs that, you know, are extraordinarily high leverage in the last year of Pettersson and Hughes' ELCs. So, you know, just coming back to it all, I think that you're right. Like, it's just all around regrettable, I think, for Canucks fans who've waited so long for this team to be back on the rise, right? They've identified sort of the right core pieces over a multi-year process, right, to get here. And yet one wonders if they'll ever with this group get like a full value kick at that can to ice a contending team, just based on the dynamics of how locked into depth players their cap money is at the moment, and how expensive their star players are then going to get, and the dynamic of the flat cap, and the dynamic of the recapture penalty. Like, one wonders if, while they capitalized on the pain of those losing years to mine elite talent, if they'll ever be flexible enough in terms of the cap sheet to really take one of those big shots, big all-in shots, with this group. And that just sucks. Like, that's just such a crummy sort of situation to be looking at as an analyst or as a hockey fan.
Yeah, and the other thing that you touched on earlier, and we'll get to here in a sec, is the comments again by Jim Benning about the youth movement, and absolutely this team is going to plug young players into the lineup.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It's been a common refrain. Every media availability, and including this weekend when Jim spoke to Kuz, you know, he makes reference of it's going to happen. They are confident that they've got young guys that they can plug into the lineup. You mentioned Hoglander and Cole Lind earlier. I think really this applies more to the back end, where it's just a question of who. We know the candidates: Rafferty and Chatfield on the right side, Ulevi and Rathbone on the left, and it does now look and sound like these guys are going to play, but how many of them, and, you know, in what roles, just based on the depth chart that they've got, if we assume Nate Schmidt does play the right side, then you know, it feels to me like Olia Levy sort of has the inside track to be the most regular of any of those guys. Like, that third pairing left side kind of feels like it has his name on it, but that also leaves the right side. But it also leaves, like, where has Jordy been in all of this? And is he just a depth piece still? Or does he get a chance to play any more regularly than he did over the second half and into the playoffs last season? So still lots of moving parts, but I think it's pretty clear from the comments of the general manager through the month of October that we can expect to see a couple of those young guys on the back end.
Yeah, and I think Jordy Benn's the perfect third pair guy for a situation where you've got four hopefuls, two lefties, two righties, auditioning presumably at training camp, because he can play either side. And because he's been there before, you know, he's a tougher type player, defensively reliable. Like, he does limit the opportunities against typically. So, you know, having him shift over to the right side to play with Yo Levy on a third pair, I think in your mind's eye, you know, sounds like a risk. Like, it doesn't sound like it'll be as good a third pair as Stetcher and Fantenberg necessarily, but or Fantenberg-Myers. But it does nonetheless sort of present them with some options, so long as Ben remains in Vancouver, you know, to play, depending on who wins the job, right? Like, Yo Levy, I think, is probably ready at this point. Like, it's time to see what he can do in the NHL. And, you know, I thought he was really good in phase three. Like, the songs that were sung about that breakout pass in the Minnesota Wild game one were maybe a bit much. But he performed really well, and his skating looked so much better, worlds better, in phase three and in that game against the Wild, his NHL debut, than it did when I saw him, for example, in Utica in November. And that's a credit to a young guy who's been through a lot. His feet will determine how good he can be, right? Like, if his feet are up to speed, there's no question that he's got the hands and the brain to play this game at its highest level. It's just whether or not the feet are there. And then, you know, Rafferty's really good with the puck. Chatfield's, I think, a little bit safer without it. And then you've got Rathbone. And Rathbone, for me, is the big X factor, the one to watch, because he's the guy who might have ceiling. Like, I think we know what Yo Levy, Rathbone, and Rafferty are. You know what I mean? Like, we don't know what they are at the NHL level necessarily, but I think we know mostly what they are at their respective age. Rathbone's the guy who has, you know, some ceiling beyond that, in my view. And what I'm curious to see at training camp, like, for me, one of the biggest things to watch at training camp will be how ready does Jack Rathbone look in his own end? Because I think if he's polished there, you know, like, the more important thing for Rathbone to show to earn that job isn't going to be, like, that I'm the best of these guys. It's that I'm ready to play. Like, I'm ready in terms of the details in my defensive game. And I think if he does that, he's got a shot. But they're not going to put him in a spot like, you know, like we've seen with Gaudette. Like, they're, you know, and I mean this past season, not when he was forced into the lineup prematurely because of injuries. But this past season where they kept him on the roster, kept him around, but sort of waited a couple months and sort of gave him, you know, a little bit of rope here and there until he, you know, arrived and forced the issue. Like, I suspect that if Rathbone's not, like, lights out, earns the spot, no question about it, his defensive game solid, that he'll sort of be put in that kind of, you know, ramp-up type position, just as they work through the issues connected with, you know, making sure he's not being put in a spot where he's not going to succeed. So, it's going to be an interesting sort of battle overall, but for me, the concern on the Canucks' back end isn't necessarily the young guys. Like, for me, the bigger concern is Myers-Hughes. Like, to me anyway, there's concerns in the top four in terms of, you know, are Hughes and Myers going to be solid enough defensively to play all the time together? Because I do think, like, I think Tanev benefited more from playing with Hughes than Hughes benefited from playing with Tanev. That's my personal view. But I do think the calibration of that pair was, like, perfect. Like, they were definitely more than the sum of their parts. And I think Hughes will miss that in terms of that, like, bodyguard element that Tanev brought in his own end. And then on the second pair, you've got Edler Schmidt. And I mean, ideally, surely, the Canucks would find better ways to manage Edler's minutes. But without another right-handed defender coming in, like without carving out some cap space for a Hamonic type, you know, I don't really see how you get around those two big question marks. How can Edler hold up in a more condensed schedule if he's playing huge minutes again? And can Hughes and Edler, you know, replicate the defensive impact that Hughes and Tanev have had? I mean, for me, those are huge questions and ones that I'd be concerned about were I in Travis Green's shoes.
Right, which is why we need a training camp to start to get some answers, and there's still so much uncertainty, but we should point out our colleague Mike Russo. I had a great chat with Bill Daly, talk about a meaty piece that, I mean, it answered some questions, but it leaves you with a bunch more. I mean, nobody knows right now, and obviously it's COVID-related still, and there are a million balls in the air, but certainly check that out to get a better sense of what the National Hockey League is thinking. While we're on the subject of promoting athletic properties, Rick Bowness, the head coach of the Dallas Stars, got them to the Stanley Cup final, and of course, longtime assistant to Alain Vigneault in Vancouver. He's going to join Scott Burnside and Pierre LeBrun this week on the Two-Man Advantage pod here at The Athletic. Thanks to all the people. Great feedback. We hope that people would enjoy the arbitration edition that we did the last podcast. I know on the surface, arbitration, maybe not the sexiest of topics, but man, I thought Alan Walsh provided a great walkthrough and some terrific stories there. And you talked about Brendan Morrison as well. BMO with that great arbitration case that still gets talked about almost 20 years later. So lots of people reached out on social and online, and we appreciate that feedback. Good to hear from you, and glad that, just at a point in time here in October when there isn't a whole lot else going on, that we thought we would kind of do a little deeper dive into a topic that doesn't get a ton of attention. So thanks to everybody for the feedback.
Mike Russo and I chatted on the phone on Friday shortly after his piece got published, and I joked to him. I said, Mike, why are you even bothering writing that piece? Of course there's going to be a hybrid bubble in Vancouver. Like, I'm never getting out. It's just going to follow me around. but that was my main reaction to his piece, which had a ton of Vancouver-centric details.
Yeah.
Vancouver remaining very much on the NHL's wish list as a potential hub city, although we'll see whether or not the government, and the Ministry of Health in particular, feels perhaps a little bit differently about the bubble now that they have proof of concept in Edmonton.
All right, let's just finish with this, because this kind of drives home the ground that we have covered over 12 months. This time last year, the final week of October, your boy, Tim Schaller, was on a goal-scoring bender for the Vancouver... You remember this? He had four goals.
I do,
goals.
Washington Capitals comeback.
Yeah, but he had four goals in three games. He scored in Detroit, yep. And then they came off the road. He scored twice against the Capitals, and
yep.
Once against the mighty Florida Panthers as well. So he had four goals. He scored
right.
Five goals
oh,
as
wow.
a Canuck. He scored five goals oh, wow. as a Canuck last year. I repeat, five, not ten. He scored five as a member of the Vancouver Canucks last year.
All right. I'll buy you your gum.
Yeah, this is the longest payoff for a bet in wagering history, by the way.
I know. Yeah. I mean, I'll make good. I haven't seen you in eight months. Oh, my God.
We're overdue for...
Yeah, we are. We are. We got to go get some patio beers or something, man.
But yes, it was this week last year that Tim Schaller was running wild offensively in the National Hockey League, so I just had to bring that up.
No, and I appreciate it, because that was a glorious 2 weeks. I was like, oh, I've done it again. Oh, man. Yeah, no, look, those were good times. Like, those were just good times. I miss that. I miss everything about that. The LA Kings game and the storylines there. And that was really, like, for me, when I think about the Canucks season, it was that LA Kings game the day before Halloween where the power play really ran rampant with Pettersson and Besser flipping off. So they were playing both their downhill and their off wing sides of those half walls. And that was when I was like, oh boy, like this Canucks team could be an offensive juggernaut. Like, my goodness. And then they crushed San Jose on the way back from SoCal. And I was just like, oh my God, this team's going to fill the net. And one thing I will say is I still think they've got the ability to do that. and that's going to give them a little bit of a higher floor in terms of their goal prevention. But man, I just look at this roster right now, and just to summarize everything we've talked about, I just look at this roster right now, and I do wonder, you know, it has enough been done to give that offensive talent, which we know can feast, the place settings they need to enjoy those burned hash browns.
Well, and that's just it. Like, no, like, honestly, for all the sort of the frustration of the fan base that big shiny objects didn't come this way in the offseason, it is important to remember those nights. And I know the Kings weren't very good, but there were 4 power play goals that night. There were the 5 power play goals in Nashville. Like, there is still enough here to get, obviously, excited. Like, I mean, it's going to be another season to watch Pettersson and Hughes do their thing and JT Miller's second season. Like, there's still a lot to like. It's just that they didn't round out. They didn't support that group. And I think that's the biggest frustration of all. So, look, we need games. It's going to be a while still, but, you know, need games to ultimately see what this team looks like, how they go about their business, and what's possible. And look, maybe there will be some surprises to come out of training camp. Some of the young guys will be ready to step up and step in. We shall find out whenever training camp rolls around. But we'll continue to push out the podcast here a couple times a week. And there'll be issues and certainly lots of ground to cover as we work our way through the uncertain times until we get final word on when next season is going to begin. In the meantime, check out our comments section for each podcast episode of The Athletic app. Rate and subscribe the VanCast on Apple. We love to hear from you, your thoughts, your comments. You know, again, if there are guests that you'd love to hear us get onto the podcast, by all means, let us know. If you want to suggest some topics of conversation. Oh, by the way, you and Harm, we should mention you and Harm are having lunch with the people tomorrow. Right?
We are, yeah. We've got a Q&A up tomorrow at The Athletic. Come join us. Be a lot of fun. We'll cover off all the off-season hot buttons. And yeah, that's starting at noon Pacific time. We'll be tweeting out and promoting the link heavily on Twitter in advance. But come spend your work-from-home lunch break with us talking Canucks.
I like it. It's a date. Don't forget, if you're not a subscriber to The Athletic, what are you waiting for? Subscribe now and save. It's your last week to take advantage of this offer. Go to theathletic.com/fancast. You can receive an all access subscription for just $1.25 Canadian a month. All right, for your answer, it's Jay Pat. As always, thanks so much for listening to another edition of the VanCast here at The Athletic and theathletic.com.